Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back. Hour two of the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Welcome to all that were listening to your first place Milwaukee Brewers. They have beaten the Pittsburgh Pirates today, 3-2. Andrew McCutchen, all the RBIs, got a home run in the first and drove in two runs in the top of the ninth. A come from behind win for the Brew Crew. Always makes me feel good. And I know I can welcome back all the, you know, true blue Brewers fans that, you know, moved down the dial for a bit, and now you're back. So welcome back. Let's talk some backyard politics right here in the great state of Wisconsin, where I live, and I suspect many of you live as well. Talking with our good friend, want to thank him, John Nichols from The Nation. John, always a fine choice, and I always appreciate when he answers the call. But talking about the U.S. senatorial race, and Jennifer Rubin, and John, you know, had a few words of advice for Jennifer Rubin, at least did not perceive her to be in the know on this race. But Jennifer Rubin, again, is wading into this race. This is like three articles in less than 2 weeks at the Washington Post about the U.S. Senate race to beat Ron Johnson. Here is how it's described in her newest opinion piece. The Wisconsin GOP is stuck with Ron Johnson. Yes, they are. Democrats could. According to Rubin, pick a winner. Yes, they could. Democrats have a narrow path to saving their Senate majority in the midterms. It runs through Pennsylvania, where Senator Patrick Toomey, a Republican, is retiring, as well in states where Democrats will have to protect seats they currently hold. You know, see Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada. But perhaps the most tantalizing opportunity for Democrats is in Wisconsin, which serves as the perfect example of a Democratic primary voter's critical role in picking an electable candidate. Did you catch all that? Jennifer Rubin is very, very concerned about the electability of the Democratic nominee. Now, not for the first time, Rubin's going to cast a little bit of shade at Mandela Barnes, and I consider Mandela a friend. You know, like a friend, not a Facebook friend. I've known this guy for 10 years. I've known him since he was a young state lawmaker in Wisconsin, well before he was lieutenant governor or had big ambitions of serving in D.C. Hell, I think I knew the kid before he could grow a mustache. But anyways, he's a very charismatic politician, but a little too liberal, apparently, for Rubin's taste. So keep that in mind. Also keep in mind, she doesn't live here. She doesn't get a vote, but she certainly can have an opinion. More from Rubin. The Republican incumbent in the race, we all know Rojo, Senator Ron Johnson is an election denier, vaccine skeptic, and eager Russian propagandist. He has become a reliable gaffe producer, recently called for repealing the Affordable Care Act, and opposes luring jobs to Wisconsin or helping people pay for raising children, and his poll numbers stink. Oh, Rubin, you're not the only one to notice. He had a fine pollster on yesterday, Charles Franklin, a Marquette University Law School poll, while Rubin goes to the Marquette findings. She quotes, Johnson is seen favorably by 36% and unfavorably by 46%, while 14% say they haven't heard enough and 4% say they don't know. The poll that dropped yesterday also found 39% of voters say cares about people like me, describes Republican Ron Johnson, while 50% say it does not describe him. 11% say they don't know. Prior to the 2016 election, by contrast, in the Marquette polling, Ron was at 43%, cares about people like me, 39% did not. And if you'll recall, folks, Ron Johnson won that election, but he was plus four then. He ain't plus four anymore. Here's more from Ruben. The poll is hardly an outlier. A morning consult poll earlier this year had Johnson's approval rating at 36%. I got to tell you, Ruben, that still seems high. 51% of voters disapprove of his performance, including 56% of independents. Interestingly, for a swing state, voters in Wisconsin express progressive views on some key issues. The Marquette Law Poll reports a substantial majority. Now, she's quoting from Franklin's polling. A substantial majority, 69%, favor the state's current law allowing a license for concealed carry of handguns, and 26% oppose, 5% don't know. So 69% apparently are all down for concealed carry. And I'd point out my little buddy Dominic, he occasionally does that. He does have his concealed carry permit. Ruben notes, in contrast, a proposal to allow concealed handguns without the need for a license is supported by only 16% and opposed by 82%. So you see the difference there. You know, no licensing, no anything for concealed carry is opposed by everyone. 82%, that's pretty much everyone. A little bit more here. Support for same-sex marriage remains strong in Wisconsin and has gained support over time. Currently, in my state, 72% support marriage for gay and lesbian couples. 19% oppose. 8% say they don't know. And just as an aside, before we get back to Ruben's thoughts, contrast that with the actions of the Florida governor and the Florida legislature in their Don't Say Gay bill. And I know it doesn't say gay in the bill, but we all know what it is intended to do. And DeSantis has used it as the worst of social wedge issues, right? And he's even gone after the Disney Corporation. He's even going to stick it to the taxpayers of the great state of Florida if he has to. And apparently he feels like he does because, you know, it's all driven by ambition. He thinks he will be a presidential candidate. But here in Wisconsin, we don't hate the gays. In fact, we embrace gay marriage, same-sex marriage. I recall it was actually the first day of the Democratic Party convention. I believe it was like June 6th of 2014. And Dominic and I, as has become our custom, at that time it was a Friday-Saturday affair. Mary Burke was running, if I recall, to try and be the opponent to beat Scott Walker. Her only opponent was, you know, our pal Brett Halsey. We took him off campus. We hotboxed his ass at the hotel in the Dells there. But anyways, back to the more important part of this story. As we were interviewing Mike Tate, who at the time was the Democratic Party chair of the state of Wisconsin and had come from Fair Wisconsin. And Mike Tate, back in 2006, I don't know if you recall, but there was a constitutional amendment passed in the state of Wisconsin. Basically a preemption, you know, one man, one woman, one marriage, that's all you get. Although, you know, there was no limitation to divorce or whatever, but just the point being, this was a state that constitutionally banned same-sex marriage. And Barbara Crabb, I believe, was the federal judge that made the ruling on that day. And we were on the air with Mike Tate when that ruling came down. And I mean, Mike Tate had tears in his eyes. It was such an important moment for the state of Wisconsin. The very same state that would pass a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage. Well, the floodgates were open that week. By Monday of that week, you know, after the, I think it was June 6, 14, we had some of the very first people that got married under this state. Crabb effectively created an open door for same-sex marriage to happen for a short period of time. Now, eventually, the U.S. Supreme Court joined her, and this became the law of the land. Although we know plenty of conservatives that would like to roll back that right of same-sex marriage, revisit it. Although they would call themselves constitutional originalists, we know they're anything but. So, Wisconsin, as Ruben notes, relatively liberal on a number of these issues. Back to her writing. In addition, a majority, 64%, say that undocumented immigrants who are currently in the United States should be allowed to stay. Well, that's a clear majority of Wisconsinites. 16% say they should be able to stay, but only as a guest worker, and only 16% think they should be exported, forced to leave the United States. Again, that's pretty liberal stuff, at least in my opinion. And these may pose a problem for Johnson, who has become an extreme right-winger and is more in step with the MAGA crowd than moderate Midwest voters. His positions earned him an 89% conservative rating from the far-right Conservative Political Action Conference, you know, CPAC, I think they call it. He's very popular at CPAC, that Rojo. More from Rubin. While associating with President Biden likely would not help Wisconsin Democrats, given his approval ratings underwater in the state, Biden's negative 10, 43, 53, approve, disapprove. Johnson's unpopularity provides an opportunity for Democrats, assuming they choose an electable candidate. There she goes again. As I've written, I think I probably noted that prior Rubin article, the leading Democratic Senate contender, Mandela Barnes, initially went too far left, you know, to her flavor, as she writes, favoring Medicare for all, abolishing ICE. Although he recently tried to tack back to the center, his opponents and Democratic observers have made the case he will attract fire from Johnson, who would love nothing better than to make an election choice between him and someone he can try to label as a socialist. I got news for you, sister. Rojo's going to call him that no matter who he or she is. A little bit more from Ruben. That concern and some tenacious campaigning by Barnes' opponents seem to have an impact. She points out, you know, the closing of the gap here. Barnes has fallen from 23 to 19% approval, or at least support. Alex Lazary has risen to 16%. Sarah Godlewski doubled, nearly doubled her share at 7%. Tom Nelson steady at 5%. Here's how she concludes. There's plenty of time for candidates to make their cases to voters before the primary, August 9th. Wisconsin Democratic primary voters should understand their choice could be the difference between life and death. Or as she writes, keeping and losing the Senate majority. With an incumbent as weak and vulnerable as Johnson, Democrats must consider, according to Rubin, which candidate is best able to make an election a referendum on him. Republicans are hoping the election is about anything other than their gaffe-prone MAGA soldier. Or Rojo, as we like to call him here. Come back with us. More Devil's Advocates. Phone lines open. 844-967-2789.
The Devil's Advocates. Making radio great again.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. The Thursday edition, the bitch is back. I'll tell you what I mean in just a moment. I've also, against my better judgment, decided to accept the kind invitation of the Foxy News people. I will be on Fox News this Sunday, I believe in the 12 o'clock hour. I'll confirm. I'll let you know. I'll probably post on Twitter or Facebook or something. And I asked, so, you know, now that you sucked me in, now that you got me going back on Fox, and apparently I become a favorite. I must not be doing it right. My wife's like, why do they keep inviting you back? You must not be doing it right. I said, obviously, I'm doing something wrong, because I should be banned from Fox News by now. But anyways, I'll take another crack at getting banned on Sunday. I'll be on with Mike Emanuel. I've been two, three times on his show. Like three times this year I've been on Fox News. That's a little scary, man. Rachel Maddow, 844-967-2789. You could always invite me on. So anyways, hope you watch me. But the bitch is back. In this case, the bitch being Roger Stone. That's how he announced his return to the Twitterverse. Let me read just a little bit from the Daily Beast. I think you folks are going to like this one. You know Roger Stone. He is the goofy-looking guy. Kind of looks like the Penguin of Batman fame. Wears the goofy glasses and often the tailored suits. My understanding is he's got a big-ass Richard Nixon tramp stamp right in the middle of his back. Something quite strange about that to me. And he was pardoned by the former president, Donald Trump. But Now he's back on Twitter, baby. Roger Stone tries to come back to Twitter. Let me read. After Elon Musk purchased Twitter for $44 billion, and as an aside, if a guy can offer to pay $44 billion for anything and still be rich, we got to start taxing the rich. I think, and I didn't actually verify the accuracy of this, but someone said, you know, if you saved $200,000 per day from 1492 on, from the day Columbus found America till today, you'd have somewhere close to $44 billion. If you save 200 grand a day for however many years that is, what, something more than 500 years at 200 grand a day. You know, these numbers are just bigger than my ability to comprehend. But, you know, I'm sure it's going to work out fine for him. I hear the stock price over at Tesla is way down, though. Guy lost like $140 billion on his stock price, or at least the corporation he's a major stockholder in does. So, you know, careful what you wish for, Elon. Apparently, Roger Stone wished nothing more than to be on Twitter, kind of like Trump. You know, if Elon does actually close on this transaction, if he actually opens or closes on Twitter, I guess the case would be, you know, if he lets Donald Trump back on, if Trump is permitted to be on the platform, he will be on there all day, every day, like he always was. I mean, this whole Truth Social lark, Trump has posted once on his own social media site in months. But let's talk about Roger Stone for just a minute. Roger Stone's homecoming didn't last long, as the longtime ally of ex-president Donald Trump was rebanned within hours of creating his new account. Well, bitches, I'm back on Twitter, Stone bragged on Telegram early Thursday morning. I'm anxious to see how strong Elon Musk's commitment to free speech is. Well, maybe you should wait until after he owns the joint. After the new account, at Roger Stone USA, was connected to the self-described dirty trickster, he was banned within minutes again. The account reference was permanently suspended for violations of Twitter rules, specifically our ban evasion policy, a Twitter spokesperson told the Daily Beast. That's where I find this reporting if I didn't mention that. Reached for comment by the Daily Beast, Stone said, I posted a new account to prove a point. I look forward to whoever made the decision to suspend my account getting fired. Attention, Elon Musk. Man, these guys are snowflakes, right? In 2017, Stone was initially banned from Twitter after hurling a series of vulgarities at CNN host on the platform. Here's again a quote. My new Twitter account was suspended after just 6 hours. So much for free speech. He further wrote after getting the boot, just makes me like Telegram all the more. What, no Truth Social? In other Stone news, he has recently launched his own nightly show, The Stone Zone, on Frank Speech. Now, I watched a little snippet of The Stone Zone, you know, just because it was called The Stone Zone. I got confused. I thought it was something entirely different. And it was pretty bad. He is not as dynamic as yours truly, not in the media format, at least. Pretty bad stuff, pretty bad tech. I mean, at one point, the producer interrupts him during a segment, you know, like live TV, live streaming, whatever they're doing, and said, hey, man, can you sync up your voice with your face? Basically, his video was so off. It was like watching an old Kung Fu movie. You know what I'm saying? In other Stone news, I know I'm being a bit redundant here. He has recently launched his own nightly show, The Stone Zone. Not to be confused with the Stoned Zone, which apparently Crudy was looking for, on Frank Speech, the streaming platform created by, wait for it, MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell, and claimed he was being censored on his pal Trump's social media site, Truth Social. So let me see if I got this straight. Roger Stone can't even find a platform on Truth Social. There's only like 500,000 people on Truth Social. Twitter, last time I checked, like 192 million. Substantially larger as an outfit, organization. We're going to come back. We're going to talk more about The MyPillow guy, Mike Lindell. Apparently, he has funded efforts to break laws, commit crimes, breach voting machines in five different states. New reporting out. We'll tell you all about it. Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. You got a bitch. Call us right now. 844-967-2789. We'll come back with your calls and more breaking news.
I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for those meddling devil's advocates.
And all the girlies say I'm pretty fly for a white guy.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Want to jump into some investigative reporting at Reuters? And I'd also like to hear from you. Be a part. 844-967-2789. No saving your best takes for when Dom joins the show at 5. I know what you're doing. Anyways, let's jump into this report. Trump allies breach U.S. voting systems in search of 2020 fraud evidence, air quotes, evidence, because, of course, there is no evidence. I think they'd have found it by now, but let me jump into some of this fine reporting. 18 months after Donald Trump lost the White House, loyal supporters continue to falsely assert that compromised balloting machines across America robbed him of the 2020 election. He was robbed, I tell you. To stand up that bogus claim, some Trump diehards are taking the law into their own hands by attempting, with some success, to compromise the voting systems themselves. Previously, unreported surveillance video captured one such effort in August in the rural Colorado town of Kiowa. Footage obtained by Reuters through a public records request shows Elbert County Clerk Dallas Schroeder, the county's top election official, fiddling with cables and typing on his phone as he copied computer drives containing sensitive voting information. Schroeder, a Republican, go figure, later testified that he was receiving instructions on how to copy the system's data from a retired Air Force colonel and political activist bent on proving Trump lost because of fraud. So he's being directed by another fringer who says, yeah, go dig into the machines. I'll tell you how to do it. The day, August 26, Schroeder made a forensic image of everything on the election server, according to his testimony, and later gave the cloned hard drive to two lawyers. Schroeder is now under investigation for possible violation of election laws by the Colorado Secretary of State, which has also sued him, seeking the return of the data. Schroeder has defied the state demand and has refused to identify one of the lawyers who took possession of the hard drives. The other is a private attorney who works with an activist, wait for it, backed by Mike Lindell, the pillow mogul and election conspiracy theorist. Schroeder said in a legal filing he believed he had a statutory duty to preserve voting records. Apparently he declined to comment to Reuters. The episode is among eight known attempts to gain unauthorized access to voting systems in five U.S. states since the 2020 election. All, did you hear that? All involved local Republican office holders or party activists who have advanced Trump's stolen election falsehoods or conspiracy theories about rigged voting machines, according to Reuters. Some of the breaches, including the one in Elbert County, were inspired in part by a false belief that state-ordered voting machine upgrades or maintenance would erase evidence of alleged fraud in the 2020 election. In fact, state elections officials say those processes have no impact on the voting system's ability to save data from past elections. And the incidents include a North Carolina case first reported last week by Reuters, in which a local Republican Party leader threatened to get a top county election official fired or have her pay cut if she did not give him unauthorized access to voting equipment. See how this is working out? In southern Michigan, a pro-Trump clerk who has expressed support for the QAnon conspiracy theory on social media, defied state orders to perform maintenance on a voting machine on the unfounded belief that doing so would erase proof of alleged fraud. In another Michigan case, a Republican activist impersonated an official from a made-up government agency in a plot to seize voting machines. Some of the people and groups involved in the vigilante election investigator movement are drawing financial support from Lindell, the MyPillow Incorporated chief executive and one of the most visible backers of Trump's false fraud claims. Lindell said he hired four top members of one group, the U.S. Election Integrity Plan, or USEIP. The group got Lindell's backing about 3 months after its co-founder advised Albert County Clerk Schrader in his effort to copy and leak the voting data. In all, Lindell told Reuters he has spent $30 million and hired up to 70 people, including lawyers and cyber people. Let's not forget he had the big cyber symposium attended by Wisconsin's own Michael Gableman. At your expense, taxpayers. Partly, back to the article at Reuters, partly in support of Cause of America, a right-wing network of election activists. Well, that's a kind euphemism for fringers. Lindell, who said he hasn't been involved in any data breaches, said his quest aims to prove fraud in the 2020 vote and to reshape American elections by getting rid of electronic voting machines and returning to paper ballots. What could go wrong? The Trump ally said his fraud claims will eventually be vindicated in spite of what he described as ridicule from the media. Guilty. I'm guilty. I've ridiculed you, Mike. We got rid of the machines, Lindell said. We need to melt them down and use them for prison bars and put everyone in prison that's involved with them. Apparently, a spokes-Trump person did not comment to Reuters either, but a little bit more. Four experts in voting law told Reuters the extent of these balloting data breaches is unprecedented in modern U.S. elections. The violations are especially worrying, say elections officials, because they break the chain of custody over ballots and tabulating equipment. Such safeguards allow for the tracking of exactly who has handled sensitive voter data. They are essential to making elections secure and to resolving any challenges or fraud allegations. So the very breaching of these machines is making them insecure. The very thing that Lindell claims he's trying to discover, he's exposing these very machines to. Or at least he's funding this sort of activist outreach, right? The vigilanteism. Here's a quote. This one from David Becker, executive director of the nonpartisan Center for Election Innovation and Research. You need to make sure those ballots are maintained under strict chain of custody at all times. It's destroying voter confidence in the United States. Such breaches can also constitute privacy invasions by exposing information about individual voters. The Colorado data Schroeder leak likely included ballot images that showed how people voted, according to the Secretary of State's office. If so, that would violate a core principle of modern America's democracy, the secret ballot, I think it's called, right? Which is intended to protect voters from politically motivated harassment or intimidation and to prevent vote buying. Well, Trump might have had a better effort if he'd have bought a few more votes. The secret ballot is a fundamental right in American elections, said Pamela Smith, president of Verified Voting, a nonpartisan group that advocates for secure elections. Kind of the opposite of what Mike Lindell's group is apparently, you know, getting as an end result here. And the incidents examined by Reuters all took place in states that have been competitive in recent elections. Now, here's where the violations, the breaches occurred. Two occurred in Colorado, three in Michigan, and one each in Ohio, Pennsylvania, and North Carolina. At least five of the, and that's just what we know about. That's just what Reuters found. At least five of the cases are under investigation by local or federal law enforcement, with three arrests and one conviction, according to state and local officials. Four of the breaches forced election officials to decertify or replace voting equipment that was no longer secure. The FBI also declined comment. And the type of data leak varies. In some cases, the full extent of the losses remains unknown. In Colorado's Mesa County, the Secretary of State accuses Tina Peters, I think we've heard of her, she's a big Trumpster as well, of allowing an unauthorized person to make a forensic image of voting equipment's hard drives. In addition, confidential passwords required to upgrade the county's election software were published on the internet, according to the indictment of Peters. So these aren't just random allegations. These are contained in her indictment, you know, for election fraud. Like Schroeder, Peters said she was exercising her statutory duty to preserve election records. She accused Dominion and the Secretary of State without evidence of conspiring to destroy evidence of election fraud. And folks, the three other attempts in Ohio's Lake County, Michigan's Cross Village, and North Carolina's Surry County, no data is believed to have been accessed in two other cases. Reuters was unable to determine what data, if any, was stolen. So the MyPillow guys put $30 million out there, hiring lawyers, hiring effectively vigilantes to prove a fiction by breaking into the election machines. Because they want to restore confidence in the process. Don't you get it? 844-967-2789. That's sarcasm, CJ, just in case you didn't know. Jake from Milwaukee. Welcome back, Jake. What do you got?
Just a correction. Regarding the secret ballot, that actually is not in the Constitution at all. I remember I was really interested a few years ago, and I did a hard read and looked, and it is not in there. So it technically isn't a right. Now, I'm not saying that it's not a practice, because it is a practice, and I agree with it. It should be secret, but it's not codified.
That's interesting. I had not heard that.
That
is in contradiction to what I'm reading here, though, buddy. And I don't mean to be contradictory here. I just did a quick Google search. Article 29 of the convention. This basically says that ballot design in polling places... disabled people are apparently protected under the United States, the United Nations Conventions of Rights of Persons with Disabilities. They are assured a secret ballot for people with disabilities. Article 29 of the convention requires that contracting states protect the right of a person with disabilities to vote by secret ballot. Here's what I would say. You're probably right, Jake. I'm not seeing that this is a constitutionally codified right, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. My other thing is, wouldn't it be great if Mike Lindell ran for political office? I can't imagine how awesome the ads would be. I don't know. I can just dream. Maybe he will. But Mike, please run for political office.
Yeah, that would be fun, Jake. Any other thoughts, buddy?
Yeah. My last thought, I guess maybe it's some more of like local stuff, but I was thinking the other day that the whole CAFO water thing that they're gonna have back at the Supreme Court, Wisconsin Supreme Court, and they're gonna change their minds. The reason is because if they don't, the U.S. Supreme Court is gonna say it and send it back. Because Hagedorn is no longer, well, he doesn't have a spine, so he just showed us that. So, like every other Republican.
Appreciate your call, Jake. Guy calling out Justice Hagedorn in the current sense. Dan Kelly, former colleague on the high court. Of course, Kelly was a Walker appointee, and Kelly didn't actually win his seat on the court. Hagedorn did. Hagedorn won by 5,600 votes over Lisa Neubauer from the Court of Appeals. Dan Kelly got crushed by Lisa Kurowski, I believe. That race, if memory serves, Kurowski beat Dan Kelly by, I believe, 163,000 votes during the pandemic. 163,000 votes. That election was held, I believe, April of last year. So, Dan Kelly, you know, maybe you should just shut up. Come back with us. You can talk. You can say stuff. You're welcome, as long as you're not Dane Kelly and probably CJ. Although, you know, eventually we get to all the callers, lightly screened at 844-967-2789. More Devil's Advocates, lots more of your calls. And my buddy Dominic joining us just a little bit later in the hour. Now, I believe under Wisconsin law, under the Wisconsin Constitution Article 3, I believe, no, I'm not entirely sure if we have secret ballots according to the Constitution. Jake, I'm not going to contradict you any further. Apparently something in the UN about secret ballots for those with disabilities. But anyways, more Devil's Advocates. We'll be right back. Let's get some more.
Malarkey. The Devil's Advocates invented malarkey.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday edition. Dominic will be joining soon. Your calls could be next. 844-967-2789. Jake, I believe, mentioned Hagedorn. I want to talk about this article briefly at the Journal Sentinel. And I want to take note of one thing. Maybe it's just a personal thing, but every time you see a picture of Daniel Kelly, you'll see this microphone in front of him, and it's my microphone, because the only public pictures I've seen of Dan Kelly other than him holding an AR-15 are him at a I guess it was a Supreme Court debate, and it was broadcast live on these fine radio stations, and I provided the sound system. So whenever I see Dan Kelly and the microphone, just know it's Crudy's mic. Here's what the article reports. Nothing about the microphone in the picture, apparently. As he pursues a return to the state Supreme Court, former Justice Daniel Kelly, did you notice? He's going to run again, folks. Look for Daniel Kelly to run for Supreme Court for the retiring Patience Rogensack seat in the spring of 2023. And you're like, man, Crudy, we got a midterm between now and then. Why would we be talking about the Supreme Court race next spring? It is perhaps the most important race on the ballot, you know, certainly between here and the 2024. Why? It could turn the balance of the court. If one conservative retires and the quote-unquote liberal branch of the court can win one more seat, well, we win control of the court 4-3. And Brian Hagedorn, he has been something of a judicial independent. Well, that's got Dan Kelly and some of these righties quite flummoxed. Let me continue with the reporting at the Journal Sentinel. The justice under attack, Brian Hagedorn, is having none of it. He says he's fulfilled his promise to follow the law regardless of his political beliefs. I didn't read all of that. As he pursues a return to the state Supreme Court, former Justice Daniel Kelly is branding one of his previous colleagues as a half-hearted conservative. Why not a rhino, a half-hearted conservative who doesn't consistently apply the law? You know, to partisan ends is what he really means. Now, Kelly's remarks calling Hagedorn supremely unreliable show he's willing to criticize a justice who he isn't running against, and who often sided with when they served together. Aligning himself with many Republicans, Kelly is venting frustration that Hagedorn has turned out to be a swing vote on the court that otherwise consists of three conservatives and three liberals. So he went running to Righty Whitey Talk Radio, WSAUAM. Kelly expressed support for those who brought a lawsuit, arguing Wisconsin law does not allow the use of ballot drop boxes. The court plans to rule by the end of June. Here's his statement. As so many of these cases do these days, it's going to come down to what Brian Hagedorn thinks. And he's been supremely unreliable in his commitment to following what the law says, Kelly said. So there's something else that is informing him on how he decides cases. I'm not sure what it is, but unfortunately, it's not always the law as written. Now, Hagedorn, I was a little surprised. Hagedorn did respond to Kelly, and I'm not sure Hagedorn's response. Justice Kelly is dead wrong. I wouldn't even call him Justice Kelly. How about Dan or Dumbass Dan? A little bit more. When I ran for the Wisconsin Supreme Court, I repeatedly said that you should not be able to predict how a justice will vote on the basis of his or her politics. I promised I would follow the law wherever it leads to the best of my ability. I have been true to my word. Now, the greatest recent contention with Hagedorn, at least from the left, from guys like you and perhaps, well, guys like me and perhaps you, is that Hagedorn, you know, sort of flippy-flopped in the face of the U.S. Supreme Court sending back the gerrymandered maps. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court, with Hagedorn's, you know, consent, he was amongst the majority that said, Tony Evers maps, they're the least changed maps. And statistically, they were. And the prior ruling, including the 4-3 of Hagedorn, it said the least changed maps, the Republican option, or at least the Republican request that we should bake in the cake, the very partisan gerrymander from a decade ago. Well, Hagedorn went along with that as well. You know, conservatives should have been quite pleased. Pleased as punch. And after the U.S. Supreme Court waded in, Amy Coney Barrett and apparently her colleagues said, well, you know, this map that Tony Evers has created, it's reverse racism. It offers too much majority-minority representation. Too many black state senators and assembly people. So they sent it back. In Hagedorn, and I've had a few legal friends tell me, well, what the hell was Hagedorn supposed to do, you moron? The only option left to him was basically hamburger A, hamburger B, binary choice. If the Evers maps were unacceptable, well, he really only had one other set of maps to choose, and he chose the Republican maps. And these are more gerrymandered than the last 10 years. So, you know, our legislative minorities, they're baked in the cake till, you know, somebody's kids graduate from college. A little bit more here. Hagedorn was elected in 2019 with the backing of Republicans. He often sides with the court's conservatives, but has joined its liberals on some high-profile cases, including the ones that kept the Green Party candidate off the 2020 presidential. Let's not forget the Green Party candidate. I don't want to confuse that with, Kanye. Kanye tried to get on the ballot here in Wisconsin as well, and apparently had some Republican operatives that didn't know how to tell time, showed up a little bit late. Apparently, Hagedorn voted with the liberals to keep a Green Party candidate off the 2020. You know, conservatives thought, well, that'd be a hell of a way to mix up the electorate and, you know, steal some support from Joe Biden. He also committed the sin, talking about Hagedorn, of upholding Joe Biden's victory over Donald Trump in the state. And I've joked, only kind of half-heartedly joked, it was a 4-3 vote to uphold the election in the state of Wisconsin. And the four included Justice Hagedorn. One vote really upheld the election in the state of Wisconsin. And if you don't like Hagedorn, well, I'll tell you what. His term runs out in 2029. He's got a decade as well. Now, Kelly joined the court in 16 when then-gubernator Scotty Wanker appointed him to fill the vacancy created when Justice Prosser retired. You know, they did that on purpose so they could create incumbency for Kelly. But he still got his ass handed to him by Jill Karofsky. I think the voters made the right choice. And Kelly is now running to succeed conservative Justice Patience Rogensack, who's not seeking re-election next spring. Others have yet to get in the race. I can tell you, anyone other than Dan Kelly would be a good choice. In one point in last week's radio interview, Kelly criticized Hagedorn as being half a conservative without naming him. The comment came as Kelly described the redistricting case the court recently decided. This month, Hagedorn sided with the conservatives. Prior, he had sided with the liberals. We talked about that. One more quote from Kelly. I think we should be glad that there are 3.5 justices on the Supreme Court currently who understand that their job is simply to say what the law is. You know, as long as they come to a partisan outcome that favors the Republicans. Look at the record, Kelly. Your record. That's all you ever frickin' did. Come back, more Devil's Advocates, the happier happy hour, rolling into the Thursday edition with Dom.